I'm George Boracki, and this is Cityscape on 90.7 FM and WFUV.org. When you think of cats in New York City, what comes to mind? For some people, it might be this. That Broadway show closed years ago. Nevertheless, the Big Apple is still home to a lot of real-life felines. According to the New York City Economic Development Corporation, 500,000 cats live in the city as pets. Our first guest likes to photograph them. Jim Tews created a parody of the popular Humans of New York blog. It's appropriately titled Felines of New York. Jim joins me in the studio this morning. Jim, thanks so much for coming in.
Hi, George.
So what inspired you to create Felines of New York?
Basically, it started as a parody of Humans of New York. I thought that would be funny. I thought Humans of New York is great, but it's like to hear cats saying things that are serious and endearing, I thought would be funny. So that's how it started. And then it just kind of got picked up by Tumblr and featured on their radar. And then it just sort of exploded from there. And I had started taking my own pictures for it right around that time, luckily. So, but once it started going, then I was like, okay, well, I can't stop this now. I have to keep doing it.
Are you taking all of the photographs of the cats?
Yeah, now I am.
You are?
As of about, I think the first like 10 posts were, some of our cell phone pictures from friends or my cell phone pictures, or there's a couple from other photographers. But they've been my photos for the last few months.
How do you go about identifying the cats to feature?
Well, I started with friends and friends of friends, and then I put on the website a form that people could fill out, and then they put in the area they live in, so they'll put in their closest MTA stop, and then I just group by neighborhood, and on Saturdays and Sundays, I pick a neighborhood or a section of Manhattan or whatever, and I go out and I go from house to house every hour on my bike, and I take pictures of these people's cats.
What's that like to walk into someone's apartment and just take a photograph of their cat?
It's very strange. I didn't think I'd end up doing it this way. I'm doing a book soon, so I needed cats for the book and to maintain the site.
Felines of New York book.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just a book version of the site, mm-hmm. more or less. And it was like, okay, I need a lot of cats. I'm doing the math in my head, and I'm just like, this is too much. I have no choice but to extend the invite to strangers, find my, reach out to all my networks that might be able to have people fill out these forms or know, that they're a cat owner. And then I end up in a bunch of strangers' houses. And it's very, I don't know. It's been really cool because I just get to see different parts of different neighborhoods. And you don't, you live in New York, you meet people out places. You don't often get invited to somebody's mm-hmm. house. And now I'm invited to their house, and I'm rolling around on the floor taking pictures of their cat. So it's very strange, but it's pretty cool.
What was one of the more interesting experiences you've had?
Oh, everybody's been very friendly. I don't know. I've been fortunate. I've had no real creeps or anything. I'd say the only strange experiences were just cats hiding, where I get to the house and there's just, I'm like, okay, well, let's just hang out and pretend we're not here for the cat and wait until it comes out from under the bed or what have you. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't.
You actually have some photographs of cats hiding, which themselves to, I would imagine, some really nice captions.
Yeah, and that's what cats do. A lot of cats, that's very common for cats to just hide and not come out because you're a stranger and you have nothing to give them. So if I can get light under that bed or whatever, then I'll take the picture that way. But yeah, I hate to come here with no exciting stories, but everybody's been really cool. It's just been like going into being invited into people's houses.
Have you gotten clawed at all? Any scratch marks? No.
No, I don't. I have a kind of a policy to not pet the cats until the photograph stuff is over and if they come up to me. So that's how I avoid being clawed.
Have you met a cat you didn't like?
Not really. I've met cats that didn't like me. you know, it was very clear that they were just obliging whatever was, you know, like if they were just sitting there and I was able to get in front of them to take the picture, and then they would give me a minute or two, and then they would just get up and walk away. I had one cat let me take 4 or 5 pictures, and then it looked at me, and then just turned around and walked away, and it hissed at me as it was walking away, which is the most dismissive behavior I think a cat could could give to a human. I was like, well, okay, I get it, cat. You're better than me.
Are you writing all of the captions yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you get inside the mind of a cat to do that?
I genuinely do try to look at the picture and remember something about the cat when I was doing, you know, doing the photos to make it. I mean, I don't know if it's working, but to make it match up. But yeah, I don't try too hard to get inside them. I just kind of think of some thought or something that a human would have, and then put it into cat terms. That's basically the mission.
This site includes a photo of a cat named Petey. Petey was hiding under a chair, and Petey is thinking, I have no interest in talking to you, interest whatsoever.
Yes, yes, I remember that. That was the one where the woman was walking across the frame at the time. Yeah, that's a cat that would not come out.
Another cat by the name of May is sitting in the living room thinking, I'm not caught up on Walking Dead yet. I'm so bad with that stuff. I just started listening to Serial this morning. And you ask, you watch TV and listen to podcasts? And May says, not intentionally.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's like a lot of like human talk, but then with some realization that, oh, you're talking to a cat, which is why I started doing the me calling out the cat. Like, what are you talking about?
Right. Asking some questions to the cat. Your site now includes photos of cats up for adoption.
Yeah. I started doing that recently because it seemed like an obvious thing to do, you know, because I need pictures of cats, and there's cats that are willing to sit somewhere and then put, you know, be photographed in a nice way. I try to flatter the cats, and then I put a quote in, just like I do on any other post, and then I put the adoption info.
Jim Tews, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
That was Jim Tews, creator of Felines of New York. Check it out at felinesofnewyork.com. If viewing photos of cats online isn't enough for you, how about spending time with some at a cafe in Manhattan? Meow Parlor offers visitors an opportunity to hang out with cats and maybe even bring one home. So-called cat cafes first became popular in Asia before spreading to other parts of the world. I visited Meow Parlor on the Lower East Side and talked with co-founder Christina Ha. Tell me about this great space that you have here.
So this is Meow Parlor. It's New York City's first cat cafe. Today we have 12 adoptable cats, and people can rent time to come inside, hang out with some cats, order in some pastries, and have a grand old time.
Why don't you describe the concept of a cat cafe?
So a cat cafe is a place that you could go to and you can spend time with cats. And basically what you're doing is you're renting time to hang out with cats. And it's often people who come here that are people who don't have their own cats, or, you know, they have their own cats, but they just love cats in general.
What inspired you to open a cat cafe in New York City?
So my business partner in this, Emily, has been to cat cafes in other countries, and I remember she came back and told me about it, and I was so jealous, and I thought, we should really have one of these here. Like, why don't we have one in New York? Why isn't there a place that I can go to hang out with other cats? And so we were like, let's just do it, and we just made our own.
I understand, though, that you have a very interesting cat story all your own, right?
In terms of how I found my first cat?
Yes.
I was actually coming home from work one day, and we heard this loud meowing outside. And at this point, you know, it was less. 2 years ago during a heat wave, and my husband had kind of been tracking around this cat that he would see outside, kind of just, you know, really just really hot and so dehydrated. So he bought cat food for that cat, and he thought he found that cat. So he's like, I found the cat, you know, he's crying hysterically, we have to feed him. So I went, you know, I got him food, and it was totally not that cat at all. It was a different cat. It was a tiny cat, and he was just crying, and he was emaciated. And I remember we fed him, and I wrapped him up in my T-shirt, and I just took him home. And that's how we got a cat. Like, we weren't intending on getting a cat by any means. We weren't planning on, like, owning a cat. We just wanted to feed this dehydrated cat. But he was so cute and so tiny and so hungry that we couldn't just leave him there.
And one cat led to another cat, right? How many do you have now?
Four. It only took us a year to get up to four.
What do you love most about cats?
You know, it's really funny. They all have these very different personalities, and I like the struggle that I sort of have with them all the time. Like, do you love me? You know, and they're like, if it's food time, I love you very much. You know, and sometimes I love you because the sun is shining, but other times I don't. Like, it's sort of this weird struggle, and I like that challenge to be like, oh, do I love you? Because I always love you, but, like, do you love me? You know, I do a lot of things for you, and they're just like, sometimes. And, like, you know, I have one cat that really, really loves me. And it's really sad sometimes because I'll work late and I'll find out from my sister that he was at the door crying hysterically until I came home. And I find that really rewarding to have that sort of a bond with an animal.
When did the Meow Parlor officially open its doors?
We opened on December 15th, 2014.
And how quickly did you get the following that you have now? Because I understand there is a very, very long wait list to get inside these doors now.
So we opened up our reservation system on December 5th, and I think within the first 20 minutes, the website crashed. And the entire day, all we got were, like, hundreds of emails from people telling us, oh, the website is down, therefore you're going to take my reservation via email. And it was like, no, that's not how it works. And it's not down because we were actually getting reservations throughout the entire day. I think what was happening was, you know, when people were reloading it, the cookie, if they don't clear the cookies on their system, it was just like, nope, you're not going to get through. So, like, we booked out immediately, and every day we have a new day open up. And we're still getting booked out pretty far in advance, which is crazy and sort of very exciting.
What is the average wait time to spend some time at the Meow Parlor?
So right now, I think last time I checked, it was like 6 or 7 weeks out you could get a reservation. The weekends book up really fast. We do have a limited number of walk-ins every day. It's not guaranteed, but people who just happen to be in the neighborhood, have some time, can try to come in as a walk-in. So if we have space and someone didn't show up to their appointment, they could kind of come in and fill up that slot.
How many people actually come in here and do adopt cats versus people who just come in to hang out with cats?
I think the majority of the people who do come in here do end up just hanging out with the cats, but oftentimes, you know, people fall in love. We've had quite a few adoptions here from people who it was completely unintentional. They were just like, I came in, I thought I was going to play with some cats, and this one cat, you know, chose me and followed me out the door and started crying hysterically, and I was like, so I came back and I got the cat. You know, it's a lot of stories like that. So far, we've had 29 adoptions, and, you know, it's just like, it's really great because a lot of the cats that we have kind of were cats that are sort of, we view them as cats that wouldn't do as well in a more traditional shelter setting. So these are cats that people may have passed over because of their age or something else. And when they came here, people fall in love with their personalities rather than these more superficial things.
Now, you only have adult cats here, right? No kittens?
No kittens. We decided that kittens were both more adoptable and also get sick more easily. So the best thing for us to do was to focus on the cats who really needed it.
What organization do you work with? You work with one organization specifically, correct?
Yes, we partnered with a rescue group called Kitty Kind. They're based out of the Petco in Union Square, New York, and they're fantastic. I've adopted two of my cats from them.
So how does it work? How much do you pay to spend with cats here?
So it's $4 per half hour. If you have a reservation, you can stay up to 5 hours. If you are coming in as a walk-in, you can only stay for an hour, and it's just $8.
Do some people spend a full 5 hours here?
So far, I think the longest I've seen is about 3.5 hours, which is still pretty substantial. And it's like, it's incredible to see these people because they're just excited after 3.5 hours as they were at the beginning.
Now, you call this a cat cafe, but let's focus on the cafe part because you actually cannot buy food and drink here, right?
Yeah, so we have a cafe. It is around the corner so that the facilities are completely separate for Department of Health reasons. We didn't want there to be any confusion, people being like, yes, you serve coffee out of your, you know, the cages or whatnot. It's totally completely separate, but you can go there, you can buy stuff, you know, you can also have it delivered in. So it's a system in terms of, like, we don't actually really force anyone to get food or drink while they're here, but if they're in here and it's a hot day like it is today and they just want a lemonade, like, they can totally order that in.
I see over here that you have a little cat door so the cats can go in and out of this room, I guess, if they want to escape the commotion of people here.
So we worked with this great architect named Sonia Lee, who did a fantastic job kind of designing furniture and things with the cats in mind. So not only is there a cat door so the cats can kind of go out whenever they want to, all of the furniture has, like, cat spaces designed into it so they can hide while still being out on the floor. So there's a lot of sort of safe spots for cats throughout everything, but it's, like, safe but also, you know, totally functional for people.
What, if anything, has surprised you most since opening the Meow Parlor?
You know, my own cats at home, I guess, are kind of, you know, territorial. They get really jealous. The cats here, you know, I thought it was going to be a much more difficult adjustment trying to get them, you know, to coexist and get along with each other. And what's been surprising, it's, as far as I remember, I can only think of two cats off the top of my head who really, really, you know, were very vocal about these other cats and were like, whoa, 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 give me some space. But everyone else, you know, it took them a couple of days, but they've gotten along really well. And I think that's just been so surprising, and that kind of goes against, you know, this idea that cats don't want to be around other cats, because they're doing that fine here, and a lot of them, some of them are making friends here that they, like, fall in love with and they really want to hang out with, and that's amazing.
There's two right here behind you who seem like they're getting along pretty well.
Oh, yeah, that's Beetle. He's after my heart. I love him so much. And then there's his buddy. There's Max. He's a long-haired cat. And it's, Beetle came from a home. He lived with, I think, 60 other cats. He came out of a hoarding situation, so he's so easygoing and he's so friendly, and he just loves attention from people, and he totally loves other cats. So whenever we bring in a new cat, Beetle is, like, the first one there to run up and be like, hey, how are you? I'm going to jump in the cage and we're going to hang out, and welcome to this place. It's great. Like, let's have a great time. And Beetle's just that sort of personality, and it's really great to have a cat like that here.
How many cats on average are here?
So we have between 8 and 14 at any given time, and it all depends on adoptions. So if we've had, like, you know, more adoptions, then we don't have as many cats. And I think that's like, a really good thing. I think when we tell people we only have 8 cats, and at first they're like, oh, but why? And it's like, well, 4 got adopted, you know, 3 days ago, and so we're just transitioning in new cats. And a lot of people get really excited about that because it's like, oh, my gosh. You know, so many cats found forever homes.
All right. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you would want to add?
I think that it's really nice, something like this, because I feel like it's sort of the future of adoption. And I'm not saying that Emily and I are really changing anything ourselves, but I think people are starting to understand that, you know, these animals, like, they are so much more than what they are in cages. They have really big personalities, and it would be wonderful for people to get to know them for who they are instead of just adopting them because, you know, they look so cute in the cage or this or that. It's like these cats that we have, we focused very hard on cats that we thought could really, really benefit from being here. And so I think that that's been so wonderful, and I think, you know, we've been talking to a lot of other adoption shelters and people all over the country and the world who are like, this is sort of the future. You know, we just need to think about, how do we change adoption? How do we make it less sad and, you know, those sad commercials you see on TV, and more about, like, what kind of joy these animals can bring into your life? And so you don't think, oh, I'm saving this sad animal. You're thinking, I'm making my life happier.
And you have an opportunity to bond with a cat. Again, like you said, you're not looking at them from behind these cages with very sad eyes looking back at you.
Yeah, absolutely. You're here, you're hanging out with cats. Sometimes, you know, they'll sit on your lap, sometimes they'll play with your toys. You know, I've seen cats break into people's bags for cookies. It's like, people have a really good time here.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Christina Ha is the co-founder of Meow Parlor on Manhattan's Lower East Side. To learn more about it, visit meowparlor.com. Parlor is spelled P-A-R-L-O-U-R. This is Cityscape on 90.7 FM and WFUV.org. Domestic cats aren't the only cats living in New York City. The Bronx Zoo features various species of big cats. I talked with General Curator and Associate Director of the Bronx Zoo, Dr. Pat Thomas.
We have two subspecies of tigers, Amur or Siberian tigers and Malayan tigers. And we also have African lions, leopards, and snow leopards.
How many of them are on the endangered species list in the wild?
Both of the subspecies of tigers and the snow leopards are classified as endangered. The lions are classified as a threatened species, and then the leopard is a near-threatened species.
What are the primary reasons they are endangered?
In general, it's poaching and loss of habitat. Tigers in particular are poached both for their pelts, but also because different body parts are used in traditional Eastern medicines. Snow leopards and leopards are killed for their pelts as well. Snow leopards are also oftentimes killed as retaliation for perceived threat to livestock. And lions, it's primarily loss of habitat, but also conflict with villagers over livestock losses.
How much of that story do you tell at the zoo?
Well, we try to highlight the threats that our animals are facing, but we also try very hard to illustrate what we as an organization are trying to do to ameliorate those threats. So that's as big a part of the story as the actual threats that the animals are facing.
And what does the Wildlife Conservation Society do to protect big cats and their habitats in the wild?
Well, we operate on a range of strategies. At the most basic level, we try to learn what we can about what each species requires with respect to how much prey they need, how much land they need. And even within a species, that can vary. You know, the Amur or Siberian tigers, for example, require much more land than tigers that are found in more tropical environments, and that's just because their prey is nowhere near as abundant. But we also work very closely with governments to try and set aside protected reserves. We try to train local peoples and local communities to help conserve big cats. And then we also try to influence policy on an international level to address trade issues of big cats and big cat parts.
How do you go about replicating the natural environment in the zoo for these big cats?
Well, we recognize that most people will never have the privilege of seeing a tiger in either the Russian Far East or India or anywhere else that they might occur, or the snow leopards in the Himalayas. So we work with a team of artisans and curators to come up with habitats that both address the needs of our animals, which is our primary concern, but also kind of the needs of our visitors, because we want our visitors to see our big cats and all of our animals in naturalistic habitats that encourage species-typical behaviors, because we know that they won't be able to see them in the wild, but yet we still want our animals to serve as ambassadors to inspire people to help care about wildlife and want to help protect wildlife.
What's a day in your life like at the zoo when you're in charge of so much?
Unfortunately, it's an awful lot of meetings in many cases. But, I try to get out in the park as often as I can and see the animals. And certainly if there's something special going on with a collection animal, I do try to get out and see what's going on. But basically, it's just trying to act as a liaison between our curators and keepers and the various departments that they need to work with to ensure that the animals are well cared for.
And that being said, what's a day in the life of a zookeeper like, someone who actually cares for these big cats on a daily basis?
Well, a keeper job is, on one hand, I think the most satisfying job in the zoo, and on the other hand, one of the most difficult and in some cases underappreciated by some of the people that both visit and some of the people that work here. You know, they certainly get much closer to our animals than our other employees. They develop relationships with the animals, and not that we ever want our animals to, you know, be pets. We want them to be wild animals and act like wild animals and interact with others of their own species. But just the same, they do form relationships with their keepers. And that's incredibly rewarding. But then our keepers are here during blizzards. They were here during Superstorm Sandy. They're here when it's 95 degrees. You know, so there's an incredible amount of devotion on their part to the animals, to the point where they'll actually, you know, leave their families at home during blizzards or, you know, these hurricanes. And so they operate under sometimes very difficult environmental conditions. And, you know, the work in general is just physically demanding. So as I say, they have kind of the best job and also maybe the hardest job of anyone in the zoo.
What do the big cats eat primarily?
Cats are exclusively carnivorous, so they're meat eaters. Most other predators will eat some vegetable matter in their diet, but cats are exclusively carnivorous. And so our animals are fed a commercially prepared diet that has all their vitamins and minerals already included in it. And then we'll provide other types of meat for them, you know, chicken or, you know, some other forms of meat from time to time, just as variety and for enrichment.
I understand that the big cats at the zoo like the smell of perfume. What's the story behind that?
Well, cats being carnivores and predators need to utilize a wide range of senses in the wild in order to locate prey. And so they have very finely developed senses of smell and hearing and in most cases, really good eyesight as well. And a number of years ago, we found out that cats would be interested in certain perfumes and colognes that actually started when keepers would be wearing perfume or cologne. They'd see just a different response in the cats to them. And so just for enrichment, to stimulate exploratory behavior, we started putting out a variety of different perfumes and colognes in their habitats each morning. And it appears that the musk-based perfumes and colognes seem to elicit the strongest responses. And what we found is that these scents have not just benefited our animals in the zoos, and certainly it has for their enrichment because it allows them to explore their habitat a bit more. But we've also kind of taken that particular piece of information, and it's allowed us to help big cats in the wild. And we can put perfume and cologne on objects next to camera traps, and these are devices that are put out along trails in the wild and take pictures of animals as they come across the trails. And so scents have allowed us to better camera trap a variety of big cats, but also a number of other species as well. So, you know, it's great when we can come up with something that benefits our animals here at the zoo, but then has the added benefit of doing something to help that species in the wild.
Dr. Thomas, thanks so much for your time.
Okay, George, pleasure talking with you.
That was Dr. Pat Thomas. He's General Curator and Associate Director at the Bronx Zoo.
If I were king of the forest, not queen, not duke, not prince, my regal robes of the forest would be satin, and not a cotton, and not chintz.
And that's it for this week's Cityscape. Past episodes of the show are available in our archives at wfuv.org/cityscape. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter for show updates and New York City tidbits. I'm George Bodarkey. My thanks to producers Taylor Nulk and Claire Drake. Have a great weekend.
The sparrow would take wing. Fie, fie, working.
It's WFUV and WFUV HD, New York. Listener-supported public media from Fordham, the Jesuit University of New York. Music discovery starts here.